Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom on the program tonight, and it is a packed program. At a time when India's COVID numbers are surging, the government opens up vaccination to all adults of the age of 18 and above. This is a huge step and couldn't come a day too late. Couldn't it have come earlier on? That's a big question. Well, India has been seeing a declining trend in vaccinations lately. Therefore, this move today, very, very big in that regard as well. More Indians will be vaccinated. How will it all work? Well, we'll share some of the details, but it does appear that vaccines may also be available at market rates for those who can afford it, which means that all of those foreign vaccines could actually come over here because pricing was an issue in the past, may not be an issue over here right now. However, the government has ensured that those who cannot afford vaccines, right, will continue to get it free. Again, why could this not have been planned earlier? Why are we seeing these numbers at this stage of COVID? All of this on a day in which the Delhi government has announced a lockdown for a week. The big question, again, if the idea was to break the transmission of the disease, why couldn't this decision have been taken earlier on? Meanwhile, the former Prime Minister Manmohan Singh has fallen unwell with COVID at a time when there's this unseemly spat between him and the Health Minister, Dr. Harshvardhan, on COVID. He'd had suggestions. The health minister says, tell your party to get serious in many respects as far as COVID is concerned. And now, in just the last little while, another major development. The United Kingdom is going to ban flights from India from Friday by placing India on the red list because of the COVID surge in India. This on a day in which the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson cancelled his forthcoming visit to India again because of the COVID situation. But first, the big story, and this is great news. Finally, vaccinations for all above the age of 18 as India's COVID numbers approach 3 lakhs in 24 hours. Let's bring you a couple of key points as far as this is concerned. Now, from the 1st of May, every Indian above 18 can get vaccinated. The government opening up vaccinations amidst a record surge. It's a new liberal vaccination policy. The centre has stuck to free doses for those who need it. A second dose will be given on a priority. Well, joining us now right up off the top, Dr. Randeep Guleria, the director of the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, also a key member of the COVID Task Force of India. Dr. Guleria, this is fantastic news. In terms of the fight to ensure that more people get vaccinated, where will this move place us?
So I think this is great news because this will now allow a larger number of Indians to be vaccinated. And this is the next step in terms of trying to break the chain of transmission. Remember, vaccination, when you're doing, you have two main guidelines or two main things that you want to do. One is decrease mortality and therefore be able to vaccinate the high risk group and those with comorbidities. The second thing that you want to do is have a large number of people who are vaccinated so that you can break the chain of transmission. And with our numbers going up, this would be a very good step in trying to decrease the numbers and trying to build up a larger number of people who are vaccinated. The challenge is going to be to be able to make sure that it's done in an equitable manner and it's available for everyone who needs it. And at the same time, doesn't give us a false sense of security in terms of not having COVID appropriate behavior or preventing crowds and having containment zones and doing testing, tracking, treating and isolation. Everything has to happen in parallel rather than looking at one thing and then not and ignoring the other.
So, Doctor, let's talk about a couple of the points. Now, firstly, for the benefit of our viewers, it's important to note that, look, those who cannot afford the vaccine will continue to get it free. So that's the bottom line. However, there is the other 50%, which, as I understand it, state governments will be able to access and private hospitals will be able to access, and manufacturers can then market these at commercial rates. So, Dr. Guleria, does this mean that a Pfizer or a Moderna or a Johnson & Johnson or even Sputnik for that matter can come in at a market price for those who can afford it?
I suppose so. I think the nitty-gritties will be worked out by the 1st of May. But obviously what it basically means is that we have various vaccines available in the international market which cannot be at the same price as what is being offered by the Indian manufacturers, what has been negotiated by the Indian government. So there has to be a price differential which will have to be developed. And I think this is what it is going to do, because you will have reluctance for people from the open market or from vaccines which are available abroad at a much higher cost coming in if you had to fix the price, which was at what is being done for the Indian vaccines. Having said that, I personally feel that in a pandemic, we should look at not profits. We should also look at how we can get away with the IPR and allow all manufacturers to make all vaccines for the betterment of humanity rather than having patents and not allowing others to make a vaccine in a situation like a pandemic.
Particularly in a country like India with the numbers that we have, that is such an important... It's been a problem. It's been a dispute now for so many decades, Dr. Guleria. Be that as it may, 18-year-olds and, you know, getting vaccines, those under the age of 45 as well. I know today there was an announcement which said that, look, you know, it's not necessarily correct that only the young or a majority of young people are getting infected this time. But statistically, it is also true that a significant number are. So therefore, if we are benefiting 18-year-olds up to the age of 45, how will that help? I mean, could you tell us about young people falling unwell, some of the conditions that they're exhibiting?
So there are two parts. One part is number of people falling, getting the illness or getting unwell, and number of people who are getting severely ill requiring hospitalization and therefore dying with COVID-19 or having a critical illness leading to a long COVID. Now, if we were to break that up, the number of people getting illness in terms of the statistics is suggested that it could be people who are young, but many of them have a mild illness, are in at home or home isolation and don't go into hospitalization. But if you look at the hospital data, then that definitely shows that as far as hospitalization is concerned, it is still the elderly and those with comorbidities. So that's why you need to look at this data from that point of view. If you have, so that is why the first aim for vaccination should be to prevent hospitalization, mortality, and people becoming seriously ill. The second aim is to prevent or break the chain of transmission. And that is when a large number of young people are, if they're getting infected, they will pass on the disease to others.
Right.
And they will pass it on to those who have comorbidities and the elderly at their home, at their house. And they can therefore land up in hospital.
Right. I also want to bring in...
Both steps are important.
Sure. I also want to bring in Raghav Chadha of the Aam Aadmi Party at this stage. Thanks very much, Raghav, for being with us. This is a great step, isn't it? And it's something which your party had wanted for a very long time. So first up, a quick reaction on more vaccines being available, hopefully sooner than later.
Look, first, yeah, you're right. My party has been for quite some time raising the issue of vaccinating the entire population and vaccinating them fast. And we made two principal arguments. One was vaccine universalization. And it appears that the government is inching towards achieving vaccine universalization, which essentially means removing all eligibility criteria, arbitrary criteria for qualification to become, become eligible to be administered the vaccine. However, the second argument that we had made, which is equally important, must be pursued because both these go hand in hand, and that is vaccine nationalism. You cannot achieve vaccine universalization in the absence of vaccine nationalism. And by vaccine nationalism, we mean India first rule. That is, vaccinate, inoculate every Indian before we go on this indiscriminate export free. We have seen that in the last few weeks, 64.5 million doses of precious life-saving vaccines have been exported to more than 84 countries. And that indiscriminate export has caused a huge supply gap in India. Therefore, we must follow the example, essentially laid before us by countries like the United States of America that have not only banned the export of vaccines, but have also banned the export of raw material,
right,
which is used to manufacture vaccines.
Affecting us now.
So, which is now affecting us, correct. However, we are extremely proud of being a global manufacturer of vaccine, world-class vaccines, must first make India corona-free before we go on this spree of making the world COVID-free. I think it's important to inoculate Indians first. So both vaccine universalization and vaccine nationalism both need to go hand in hand. In the absence of one, the other cannot be achieved, I feel.
All right. Raghav, we'll continue this conversation in a moment where we speak about the Delhi situation and the lockdown in Delhi. But Dr. Guleria, I needed to ask you, the former Prime Minister, Dr. Manmohan Singh, quite unwell with COVID. What is his condition now?
So he's stable. He is COVID positive, but currently he is in good condition. He's stable. He's holding his oxygen saturation. But considering his age and comorbidities, it was felt that a safer option would be for him to be in hospital rather than be in home isolation. And that is why, for observation, he has been shifted to the hospital.
All right. And he's otherwise okay at the moment, and he's been well looked after at this juncture.
Correct. As of now, he's currently all right. He's on room air. He's not requiring to be given oxygen or anything like that.
All right. Well, that's welcome news. Let's move to the next part of what we are looking at this evening. This is a lockdown for a period of 1 week in the national capital. Raghav, let me ask you. Let me ask Dr. Guleria a question, because I know he doesn't want to get into the politics of all of this. How important is a lockdown in Delhi in order to break this chain? Do you believe that this just had to be done?
I feel it is very important. If you look at the positivity rate of Delhi, it is really very high. And if you look at the hospital infrastructure, we are in a very bad situation because we are running out of beds. And the only way that we can really have our healthcare structure or healthcare structure functioning properly is by bringing down the numbers. And to bring down the numbers, we have to break the chain of transmission. And currently, the only way out is to have some degree of containment, so that the spread of cases can be decreased and we can prevent the increase in the numbers. In my opinion, this lockdown is essential. We may even consider extending it for a longer period of time, keeping in mind the incubation period of the virus.
Raghav, I know Chief Minister Kejriwal has, and all of you, I think all of us, nobody wants a lockdown. It makes no sense. It makes no financial sense for those on salaries. It makes no financial sense for those who are working on a daily basis and earning, you know, on a daily basis. It makes no sense at all. However, when we are trying to save lives, there was no option. We knew what was coming. Why couldn't your government make up its mind earlier to break that chain of transmission?
Well, look, Vishnu, first of all, for a very long time, our government has been trying to strike this very fine balance between lives and livelihoods. While we wish to break the chain, we also wish to ensure that we do not break the backs of the people in the process. And therefore, of course, hindsight is always 20-20. But as Dr. Guleria has pointed out, the positivity rate in Delhi is increasing by leaps and bounds. And this is an unprecedented, rise in the positivity rate. The numbers are increasing rapidly, and these are desperate times calling for desperate measures. And it is important at a position, at a point when your healthcare infrastructure is almost reaching full capacity. In fact, in some institutions, healthcare institutions, full capacity mark stands breached at this juncture. It becomes extremely critical and important to adopt this desperate measure of imposing a lockdown. This will help apply brakes on the spread of the virus. Of course, in a longer duration, it will help break the chain, but momentarily, it will certainly decrease the rate of infection, the rate of spread of this virus. And we do hope that the healthcare infrastructure in Delhi, which is one of the best in the country, one of the best perhaps in the subcontinent, is under tremendous pressure and stands overwhelmed. So keeping the situation of the healthcare infrastructure in Delhi in mind and the increasing positivity rate, it was important to apply brakes on the spread of the virus. As the Honorable Chief Minister in his press conference also pointed out, he is ideologically opposed to this concept of imposing lockdowns. And he has been he's been very vocal about it all these months and all throughout the outbreak of this virus. However, we've come to a point where, we have to make peace with this. We have to do this. And I hope that the lockdown is only in effect for a short duration of 6 days. And there is no need for us to.
But let us also accept that for this to work, it might need to be longer. So it's no point in going back to something and then people continue with, falling very unwell.
Well, you see, there are several examples across the globe of how opening up happens. I mean, it's not that the opening up happens in a jiffy. Of course, even the opening up can also be in a staggered way. And, certain offices,
Raghav,
certain sectors can be activated.
It took 3 months for the United Kingdom with a lockdown to get rid of their strain, which is very highly transmissible. We have something which is possibly that strain or our own strain, which is very transmissible.
I think it's the, well, this is the Indian strain. I call it the Indian strain.
Which could well be more transmissible. And therefore,
yes, which has a,
we need to be ready for some. Dr. Guleria mentioned it, that look, there is incubation. We don't know, right? And we need to. All right, just one moment.
Vishnu, the only thing that is predictable about this virus is its unpredictability. Nobody knows how this virus behaves.
Well, let us hope
and
that we can
the,
get
the degree.
Sure. Well, let us hope that it's short, that, you know, this lockdown. But I want to also introduce Dr. Narendra Arya. He's with the DRDO. The DRDO has had a great presence today by opening up a facility in double quick time, because beds are a problem, oxygen is a problem, ventilators are a problem. Dr. Arya, firstly, the new hospital that you've set up, in how much time, and we've got pictures on the screen, in how much time were you able to set this up?
See, it took us 6 days to set up the hospital. Seventh day, everything was checked and handed over to the doctors who are from Armed Forces Medical Services. And today is the eighth day, and you know that admissions have been there and the hospital is full now.
And could you tell us about, you know, oxygen, which is so important? High flow oxygen is helping patients. How is it working over there?
The oxygen, we have a big tank of liquid oxygen and it's a piped supply. So as such, at present, there is no problem. It is not individual cylinders. It's a big tank out there.
And what about ventilators? I know DRDO was trying to develop its own ventilators earlier on. Are those operational?
Yeah, Mr. Vishnu, all the 500 beds here will have ventilators. 250 beds which have been started today, all of them have ventilators. And by Thursday, we expect another 250. They will also have ventilators. And let me also tell you that as far as ventilator is concerned, in the country, there seems to be no shortage. Perhaps in the country, there are around 50,000 ventilators available. So ventilators at present is not an issue.
And sorry, I just forget. Did you mention the number of beds you have, Dr. Arya? How many beds do you have over here?
Yeah, we have this facility is for 500 beds.
Right.
All ICU beds with ventilators, 250 have been started today.
So 500 beds is a substantial addition to Delhi's capacity at this stage. Dr. Guleria, high flow oxygen in a situation like this, how important is it considering what we are seeing in this round of infections?
So if we start looking at those patients who need hospitalization, the most important part is actually oxygen therapy. Very few will need to be put on a ventilator. And when we look at putting them oxygen therapy, we're looking at what we call high flow nasal cannula or what we call non-invasive ventilation, which is that we are able to ventilate them or give them high flow oxygen without having to put in a tube or intubate them, which is done only for the severe patients who need ventilatory support. So high flow nasal cannula is something which is important. It's been important for the last 8-9 months as part of our treatment strategy. And we've realized that what really saves life is giving oxygen to these patients. And that can make a big difference, because if you can tide over that period when their oxygen saturation is falling and you allow your medication to work, you allow the disease process to heal, then patients tend to come out and your mortality is much less. So oxygen is like a drug, and it's an important drug that has to be given to those people whose oxygen saturation is falling. If it falls to a level that you are not able to maintain with the normal flow oxygen, you will have to give a high flow nasal cannula based oxygen or what we call non-invasive ventilation.
Raghav, the High Court had an important order today on ensuring that, you know, some of the supplies which were diverted away from Delhi come back to you. How soon will that come in, and how soon will you be in a position to say that the crisis in oxygen availability in Delhi is over? What, day, 2 days?
Since the Disaster Management Act is in force, the union government is taking all important decisions regarding supply of medicines, remdesivir, Fabiflu, etc., vaccination, as well as allocation of oxygen to respective states. Now, there is a committee that is being chaired by senior most bureaucrats of the Government of India, and several union ministers are also involved in the allocation process. And we have urged to them that, look, Delhi is in a very sensitive point. We certainly require additional oxygen. In fact, we have noticed that the number of patients requiring high flow oxygen have increased if we were to compare them with the number of patients requiring oxygen in the year 2020. So therefore, we have made our case before them. We have also petitioned the High Court, and we do hope and we're most positive about it that the right amount of oxygen will be given to Delhi. In fact, you know, a couple of days ago, there was a danger that was averted at a leading private hospital in Delhi at about 3 a.m. in the morning. The oxygen supply of that hospital was nearing its expiry, and therefore, you know, certain ad hoc measures were undertaken, and that big danger was averted. There are reports that in several parts of the country, because of lack of oxygen, people have started dying. So therefore, oxygen becomes extremely critical in this fight against COVID. And I do hope that keeping in mind the positivity rate, the mortality rate, the spread of the infection, etc., the government of India will be very charitable in viewing Delhi's demands vis-a-vis oxygen.
Dr. Guleria, you know, before you know, you leave us, it's so important to talk about your doctors, your healthcare workers, your janitors in your own hospital at the All India Institute. Given the numbers that you're seeing, given the fact that you're wearing a PPE suit for what, 6 hours, people can't even go to the bathroom. Could you tell us about what your doctors and others, not just doctors, are going to fight this, are going through to fight this?
So it's been more than a year, and many doctors have had to give up their vacation, have had to cancel a lot of their own functions to be able to stay and be part of the battle against COVID-19. And for many of them, they are really exhausted. They've had a tough time, and now we have a situation where we have a very infectious virus. And so many of their own family members are getting infected, and many doctors themselves are getting infected, and that is affecting the whole healthcare worker pool. Also, I think it's an appeal from their side that I would really like to appeal to every citizen from the doctor community, from the healthcare community, that a year ago we clapped for them, you all sort of threw petals at them.
Yes.
Kindly now prevent crowds, have COVID appropriate behavior, because if you don't do that, you will increase the strain on the healthcare workers. If we start having huge crowded events, if we don't have COVID appropriate behavior, then you are causing a strain in the hospital, you're causing a strain on the healthcare workers. They're still stretched. Imagine in our hospital, 3 weeks ago, we had 60 patients. Today, I have more than 750 patients. We have the same healthcare workers. We haven't suddenly got five times the number of doctors or nursing. The same nursing officers, the same doctors have to wear PPE and manage now more than 750 patients. How can they do that? And that is why I keep saying that unless we decrease the number, unless everyone recognizes the responsibility of having COVID-appropriate behavior and decreasing your numbers, you are going to cause a huge strain on the healthcare system, which may crash. So I would just appeal to everyone from the side of healthcare workers that please avoid crowded events, please stay indoor, please don't go out without wearing your mask and have good COVID-appropriate behavior.
All right, Dr. Guleria, thanks very much. Raghav, I know you have a point to make, but I want to go across to Aryabha Sundaram, the senior Supreme Court lawyer who also joins us. Sir, today is an important day because, you know, the Allahabad High Court, the Telangana High Court and the Delhi High Court as well have made very important statements as far as the handling of COVID is concerned. So, Mr. Sundaram, Allahabad High Court, if you look at what they've said, if people die of pandemic in a large number due to paucity of sufficient medical aid, it would be the governments to blame which failed to counter the epidemic even after one long year of experience and learning. What does it say of our system that you've got high courts, you know, making statements like this?
Well, let me tell you very frankly, there are two sides to this whole thing. When you talk about the separation of powers, the courts have judicial functions, the executive has executive functions, the legislature has legislative functions. It's all usually very black and white. Unfortunately, this one entering into the territory of the other has become a gray area. And you often find that the court does involve itself in what would otherwise be executive or sometimes even legislative matters. So there are two sides to this. One is it the executive who are full of the trained people? Is it the legislature who are the elected representatives? Who would be in a best position and who ought to be people vested with the power to deal with these things? Or is it a court which consists of maybe very intelligent people? who are going to tell the government how they should handle the crisis. The fact is there is a crisis. The fact is that we've just been hearing what are all the problems that are faced. Now, the courts would interfere if there was some malfeasance. For example, if oxygen cylinders were being diverted to the wrong place. If, for example, the hospital beds which should have been available were not to drive people to private homes. If there were malfeasance involved, if there were like a bona fides, if there was something which was crooked involved, then the courts would interfere. But when it is otherwise a complete executive matter, for the courts to come into it is a very, very rare area unless the courts can say, this is where the state has either not followed the law, not followed a statute, or has not done its function under a given rule or a law. But otherwise, it is not for the court to transplant its judgment for what the state ought to be doing.
But that's just the worry, you know, Mr. Sundaram, if you look at what the Telangana High Court...
I found something very strange in it. So far, they said a lockdown and everything, but so far as judicial functions are concerned, that's a discretionary matter for the judiciary to take.
And they are using their discretion. But sir, look at what the Telangana High Court
is working. I do not want to allow my support staff to go out. The court support staff should also not go out. It's a lockdown. But the courts are functioning. Even if it's virtual, it is still a case of functioning. Even if virtual, you need support staff. Now, if I'm going to bring support staff in, am I not breaking the lockdown? Or is it that the judiciary feels that the lockdown does not apply to the judiciary? Now, these are all very gray areas. For all I know, all three high courts may be 100% correct in what they've said. But it is not their job. And they cannot direct the government. They cannot impose a lockdown.
No, but Mr. Sundaram, how would you respond to those who say that our government has not acted on time? Various state governments have not acted on time. People are dying. Somebody needs to help us. Sir, one second, Mr. Sundaram, let me tell you what the Telangana High Court said. And then react, sir. They have said the Telangana High Court has told the government within 48 hours... the government must decide on a lockdown or curfew, otherwise the court shall issue orders. Why is the court obliged to do this? Because no one is following orders. People are dying.
Are you asking me the
question? Yes, sir. Your comment, sir. Last word.
I'll answer you straight away. The executive can always say that this is not a case where we need to impose a lockdown. Like, for example, the Allahabad High Court feels that so far as the judiciary is concerned, judicial functions are concerned, it's not necessary to direct a lockdown, and it's purely discretionary for the courts to take that discretion. Now, equally, when the executive has various aspects to look at, to direct the executive to lockdown, I am saying this, if you find the executive is not doing its function, ask them to do what the law enjoins on them to do. You cannot direct them to do what you believe in your better judgment they should be doing.
All right. Look, I need to wrap this up. Raghav, I'm sorry I couldn't come for a final comment to you. Need to wrap this up. But three high courts, Delhi, Telangana and Allahabad today ruling and indicating that things needed to move on the ground. We'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for being with us.